The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. By the way, the breaking news earlier tonight, the United States and Canada have reached, and here it is, the Wall Street Journal, a NAFTA deal.
It's not a NAFTA
deal. No. It's not North American.
No.
It's United States, Canada, and Mexico.
Yeah, actually, Canada gets third billing here. United States, Mexico, and Canada.
Oh, yes. It's a USMCA.
Yes.
It's not NAFTA anymore because North American has been replaced with the United States, Mexico, and Canada.
Now they could hire the village people to do the song.
USMCA.
Yeah. Everybody spell out the letters.
I'm sorry. I'm just thinking of the Skynyrd song, Working for MCA. That's what I did. That was in the back of my mind. Don't know what's in it, and we won't, just like the Mexican free trade deal. The M part of USMCA, we really don't know what is in that yet. They said there's some compromise with Canada, with the
with dairy with, and automobiles.
With the dairy and automobiles, don't know, heard nothing about soft timber. We believe it's like we always see with, I don't care who's president or who's the trade negotiator is. The president always talked about we need to get rid of the $150 billion trade imbalance. That's not going to happen, okay? You're going to see little victories here or there, but basically I don't see that any of the trade agreements that we have with Mexico, Canada, or eventually Europe will be much different than the other one, than all the other ones that we have had. Just little victories here or there that we'll talk about, and I'm sure the president will come out and talk about. We've had a great success when it comes to dairy products, just like he said with automobiles with South Korea. And as we broke that down for you with South Korea, the great victory was that we are now allowed to import 20,000 automobiles to South Korea. The limit before was 10, so we've doubled the amount of automobiles that we can allow, that South Korea will allow in before the tariffs start hitting, and that's a great victory, except the fact is we don't even sell 10,000 vehicles in South Korea. Apparently it was, 6,000?
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't even got to just to 60% of the original limit that was tariff-free, and so that's what you see in a lot of these free trade agreements. You make these deals and you up the cap, even if you're not near the cap, and you claim it is a victory. Most of what happens between Canada and the United States will still remain free trade.
Yeah,
with very small tariffs between it in the long run, and you're not going to change much, as we have seen. You and I went over the trade deficit over the last, 5 years, last couple of years, especially looking at it month to month. And the trade deficit during the Trump administration is actually higher than the average of the last 5 years.
Yeah.
If you take the average of it. Now, it's not a full, term yet of 4 years, to be fair. But over the last, if you look at it, and we've looked at all the graphs here, it's a little bit higher. And again, that could change because there's always fluctuations. But July was the highest in 5 months. And earlier this year, I forgot which month it was, January or February, was huge. But one of the problems is civilian aircraft in July, and also the soybeans. Soybeans was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to be able to make that up with Europe. And as we know, the tariffs went into effect. And you have many financial publications saying, okay, here it comes, because the Chinese tariffs have gone into effect. The president knew that the administration knew they had until midnight,
mm-hmm,
in order to get the deal possibly passed, for example, in Mexico, before the president of Mexico leaves, where they believe there would be no chance after that. And the other point was they had to get Canada aboard, because there was no chance it was going to pass if it was only between Mexico and the United States. So there was pressure on both sides. Canada has been very quiet, and was reading a few articles in the Canadian media over the last couple of weeks that was stating that was on purpose. They said Trump can rail all he wants. We're not going to say anything anymore. We're done. We'll negotiate what we need to negotiate, but we're not going to get into the back and forth with them, because they believed that it fuels his passion and then support for what he is doing in the States. So they said if he's just screaming and we're not responding, it brings all the rhetoric down. And they said Jared Kushner was the one who helped the deal really, you know, get through. What the actual deal is, we don't know. But right. We don't see any major changes in the free trade deal. Steel and aluminum are not included. Don't know why on that one.
Yeah, and nothing is done until it's done. And the signed agreement will be the agreement.
Because they haven't even worked out everything yet, just a lot like Mexico. And I do think that one of the things is they said, look, we have to announce that we've come to an agreement to get the clock ticking on this, and we can work things out over the next couple of months.
Yeah, right. Well, that takes it off the political table and gets it behind the November election.
One of the problems, as we've always stated, is with the president, we have no idea, since he has covered every single opinion on trade. We don't know where he stands. We don't know what's acceptable or what's not acceptable. He's gone from a complete protectionist and a much, rhetorical protectionist during the campaign. And then he had the ability about 2 months ago to be, on Monday, a complete free trader. And by the end of the week was being protectionist again. And so when you hold every opinion on free trade, it's tough to figure where the president stands and what this eventual free trade agreement will look like. But if it's more free trade and it's not protectionist as he promised in the campaign and his supporters are happy with it, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. I mean, because I think we will get the aluminum and steel tariffs, that's going to fix itself. At some point, it will have to, just the way it did during the Bush administration. And it takes a lot longer for that process, or let's say back in the Bush years, it took a lot longer for that process to play through to the market. This year or these days, I don't know that that's the case, actually, on aluminum and steel. Because when you talk about the basis of manufacturing, the base material for so much manufacturing, you're going to have already seen a number of industries scream over the aluminum and steel tariffs. Mm-hmm. So that's likely going to play itself out naturally the way it did during the Bush years.
Well, you had a lot of financial publications just over the last 5 days saying, uh-oh, the indicators are already in that the economy is starting to slow down in the United States and also in China because of the tariffs that have been there. And as we said all along, we believe that the president was absolutely wrong to isolate the United States. If you wanted to isolate China because of their unfair trading practices, yeah, that you could win if you didn't isolate yourself. The goal should have always been isolate China. Don't isolate yourself, because you are going to have basically the same free trade agreement that you have right now with Canada, Mexico, and Europe. We're all modern Western civilizations.
Right.
You're not going to massively be able to put tariffs on all of their products, and they'll let all of our products go in free. It doesn't work that way. We knew it. You're not going to get rid of the $150 billion trade imbalance, especially when you have such a huge investment surplus into the United States.
Right.
So we knew that wasn't going to happen. And so to us, we thought there was a lot of wasted energy in the administration trying to have such incredible trade war rhetoric with Canada, Mexico, and Europe when there was really no reason to have it, and with the Asian countries as well. But I do think that when you see it, you're going to see everybody claim their little victories here or there. I already saw Canada saying, okay, this is a great deal, so they're going to be promoting their victories. It'll be interesting to see the media in the United States promoting what is viewed as a victory. And as we've said, you have to understand that when it comes to trade now, a victory for a particular country is when the consumer has to pay more for a product.
Yeah.
That's how posterior backwards we are on trade. It's a victory. Our consumers pay more. Yay. But somehow that's that's the way that it is, isn't it?
So that's how it's promoted. Yeah,
that's how it's promoted.
That's the,
that when the, consumer,
the positive, that, right. The political positive
right.
is what they say.
We're hurting the economy slightly. All right. Yeah, good. That's
because the consumers pay.
Because the consumers pay, right.
And if the idea is protectionism, which it is for targeted industry, which it is, then by definition, you're asking, well, you're allowing that industry to raise its prices. It's not just about paying the tariff. It's about paying the higher prices for the industry that you say you're protecting.
And it's the first, the initial impact, as we've always talked about, the initial impact is when you see that there's an oversupply in the market and they can't sell it.
Right.
As we've seen with many different growers in the United States, when the Chinese tariffs hit and then they had to sell, you know, that's what initially happens at rock bottom prices, you know, everything because they need to get rid of it.
And then when the adjustment comes, those prices will go way up.
Right. They'll go way up afterwards after you get rid of the stock, that the inventory that you already have that you have to get rid of. And that's why you had so many, what was the pork producers of Iowa, get killed over the last 4 to 5 months because of those particular tariffs, because they had to drastically lower.
Right.
As we said all along, economics is simply how people respond to incentive. That's it. Or you can say disincentive. Incentive one way, distance. That's it. Anything else is opinion. And the president can't change that. Nobody can change that. You can distort the markets. You can help one industry while hurting another industry. But you can't change how people respond to incentive and disincentive. And so when you do that, when you decide to raise prices, you hurt the overall economy. If you decide to raise taxes, whether it's income tax or a tax through tariffs, you hurt industry.
Yeah.
And it's that simple. And I don't decide that. Eric doesn't decide. We get people mad when we say that. Well, no, some taxes help an economy. No, they don't.
No. No.
They hurt an economy. And so I can't change that. You can't change that. None of us can change it. The president can change it. All you do is distort the market in some way.
And that's the only effect of it. And then there's inevitably the reaction against that. Because when the economy, if the economy starts tanking, if steel and aluminum products start skyrocketing, which they will by definition, then the consumer is going to react to that. When the consumer reacts to that, the economy changes. That's when you have to have another political answer, which is the opposite political answer that you gave in the first place. You undo what you did, eventually.
A lot of our listeners lined up to talk about Kavanaugh, the FBI investigation. We'll have some audio coming up, too. Your calls and comments up next. If you'd like to get in, lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
In addition to being required by law, pre- and post-trip inspections are vital to the safety of professional drivers. Conducting thorough pre-trip inspections allows you to catch any problems before heading out on the road. Post-trip inspections give the shop time to react to any problems that were identified. During your next pre- or post-trip inspection, check to make sure your fifth wheel is securely attached and free of any excessive wear. The trailer kingpin must be latched properly in the jaws of the fifth wheel. Also, check to make sure your safety chains are attached properly. TA Truck Service understands the importance of these inspections. If you find any issues during your own pre- or post-trip inspection, stop by a location near you to have your vehicle looked at by one of our expert technicians.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, part of Jeff Flake on and Chris Coons on 60 Minutes last night. Right?
Yeah.
Here's Jeff Flake, okay, just part of what he had to say.
I don't think anybody expected, you know, what happened on Friday to happen. And I can't say that I did either. I just knew that we couldn't move forward, that I couldn't move forward without hitting the pause button, because what I was seeing, experiencing in an elevator and watching it in committee and just thinking, this is ripping our country apart.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry. He's just an idiot. He really is. I'm sorry. Hey, we call ourselves idiots. So,
well, it's interesting.
But he's a different
kind.
You
know, Coons talks about Flake calling him a hero. Jeff's the real hero here.
Yeah.
Really? And Flake went on to say that if I were up for re-election, we couldn't have come to this agreement to call for the FBI background check investigation, which tells me that you don't care what the people of Arizona think.
Well, but at least that's a moment of honesty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't have voted this way if it was my own.
If it were up to the people.
If it was my own posterior on the line.
Yes.
If I was running for re-election and knew I couldn't win, I wouldn't do this.
Right.
Wow.
Which is to say, I don't care what the people say of my state.
And I'm only in it for myself.
He hasn't retired. He's not retired yet. He still, supposedly, serves the people of his state. No. He admitted that he does not. Because he knows and said it. There was no way, if he were up for re-election, he would have the political currency to get this thing done.
Let us head to you. We go to Terry in Georgia. Terry, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, thanks, gentlemen. Great show. Great show. First time caller here. I'll be brief. But I'm having a real problem with it seemed like the Democrats as well as the Republicans was giving the doctor so much praise. And to me, there was no competition. To me, she seemed like she was just totally full of it. Or for her education, she didn't come off as being too bright. For one thing, I think myself, and this is a theory, and then I'll be brief, and you guys can talk. You can talk about it, but I'm thinking she was a setup from the get-go. I mean, even I think Kavanaugh just happened to be the one. I think she was on the road getting ready to run whichever nominee got picked. It's just that there was too much lacking. When she said she believed 100% that it was Kavanaugh, right then and there, I mean,
I will tell you this. I mean, when they say that she's credible, as I've said, the reason she is incredible is because she only remembers one thing. You're credible because there's a consistency to your testimony. That's why when anybody, and I would love to, it never happened, but I would love to interview one of these Democrats who say she was credible. How? Forget about the fact that her own witnesses, there is no forensic evidence, and no witness, even the ones that she names, that backs her story. But the fact is what she says herself. If you just came in, you'd say, well, look, how come you remember this so clearly, but you don't remember this, you don't remember this, you don't remember this, you don't remember this? Her testimony alone, irrespective of the other evidence or lack of evidence, her testimony itself was not credible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's what essentially was at play here, whether or not she was to be believed. Because remember what they were calling for at first. She needs to be heard. She needs to be heard. She needs to be heard. Well, then she was heard. Well, that's not enough. Wait a minute. Well, if you believe her testimony to be credible, then that is enough. Her speaking in front of the American people. We don't get to see the FBI questioning her on television. That's not going to be before the public. So tell me what wasn't fair about this process. And that's what the left wants you to believe. It's not a fair process. Actually, it's very fair.
They never follow the company code of conduct. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
All across America, he's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, I got the audio here. I'm going to play this. This is from this week, George Stephanopoulos with Senator Hirono from Hawaii. And she was asked a question already and didn't answer it. And it was the question of, we're picking up on what we heard from Senator Graham. He's saying there's going to be an investigation of Democrats and how you handled Dr. Ford, which means, you know, everything along the way that happened, including the leak. And he specifically asked her, and now let me get to the exact question here, how he put it. Are you confident that the Democrats didn't leak that letter? And how do you respond to Senator Graham's charge that it was inappropriate for the Democrats to refer Dr. Ford to a lawyer? Are you ready?
All right.
So, all right, here are the choices. Does she answer the question or does she not answer the question?
I'm going to say that's a no.
Okay. She doesn't answer the question. Let's check it out.
Are you confident the Democrats didn't leak that letter? And how do you respond to Senator Graham's charge that it was inappropriate for the Democrats to refer Dr. Blasey Ford to a lawyer?
See, all of these things do not focus on what we should be focusing, which is the credibility of Judge Kavanaugh. That's
okay. We can end it there.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't answer the question.
Right.
See, that's why I could never do one of those shows, because I would never complete one of the shows.
You're not going to get an answer.
Because I'd say, you didn't answer the question, can we go back over it? And if you don't answer the question, since you're not answering the question in the first 10 seconds, I'm going to stop you again.
Right.
I'd get fired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I could never be on television. I'd get fired in 10 seconds. You're not answering the question. And I go in and my bosses would say to me, you work for a major network. Don't ever stop a non-answer from a politician. If it's a liberal politician, you must allow them not to answer the question. You're a journalist, damn it. Now go work at USA Today.
Complete the narrative. What are you thinking? But this is exactly, what everyone already knows. I mean, basically, CNN. It was Jake Tapper asking Jeffrey Toobin the other night, or basically making the statement. Well, come on, it's a given, really, that, and I'm paraphrasing, but really, there's no debating now that it was a Democrat, it was the Democrats who leaked. And Jeffrey Toobin's answer, so what?
So what? Yeah.
So you haven't been paying attention? No, because now you moved the goalpost. That was so 10 minutes ago.
Right.
That was so last Tuesday.
We don't care whether we as Democrats kept her privacy that she demanded, that she wanted.
Right.
That didn't matter to us. No, we didn't care about her privacy.
Yeah, we don't care about her privacy.
Look, we've said
that would be an admission. Not that Jeffrey Toobin was responsible for leaking it. But right. It doesn't matter, and that's the attitude on the left, which, by the way, it's clear that it doesn't matter because they leaked it. No one's even trying to defend that point.
And they're anymore. Okay with it. Yeah, that's a great point. They're just ignoring the question. He did say, Lindsey Graham did say, they're going to do an investigation on it. I guess we'll see.
He called for an investigation over the weekend.
He called for one, yes.
Yep.
Let us go to Lee in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Lee, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi, Lee.
Here, Eric. Good show. I enjoyed listening to it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I got something I think is extremely important. Ford last week said she couldn't remember where it happened. She couldn't remember what year it happened, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
How she got there.
How she got home.
How she got back home. I need an answer. Tell me how she hadn't been laughed away.
Who? Dr. Ford?
Yeah, you would have to ask the Democrats that question. I can't answer for the Democrats,
right,
as I said very easily. That's why she's not she's not a credible witness unless there were people to back her up. When they say she's credible, I'm like, based on what? And this is a legal statement. This isn't a personal statement against her.
Right.
I don't know what she went through. But when you say I'm 100% somebody did it, where? I don't know. When? I don't know. How did you get there? I don't know. How did you get home? I don't know. All you know is he did it, but any information surrounding it, and then the witnesses that you give contradicting testimony that you gave, it's not credible.
Right.
And that's why I've said, I don't know, somebody needs to ask the Democrats that specific question. But again, as you see, for example, George Stephanopoulos will ask a question. When they don't answer, it just moves on. It's like, okay, give me a non-answer. You want, look, something that bothers me more than even the which we call the fake news, is the lack of guts of journalists to say, I'm not leaving this question until you answer it.
Right. Because it's important.
That there is an expectation. Remember, who was it? Who asked Obama the follow up question? Where was that? Was that?
That was here in.
That was Chris DFW. Wallace, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wallace. Well, there were two separate instances.
Okay.
One where you had a local reporter here from WFAA TV in Dallas, but no, the one you're referring to was Chris Wallace. And then they came back and said, well, we weren't told there would be follow-up questions.
Right. That if you asked a question, didn't make sense, it would be a follow-up question.
Right.
That there's actually, and this is something that has to stop. This kind of bizarro world respect that we have for politicians. When I'm a journalist and I ask you a question, if you don't answer it, I'm going to ask the question again.
Right.
And then I'm going to come down right to it and say, you're not answering my question. Well, I don't feel it's important. All right, so you won't answer my question. I want you on record that you don't have the guts to answer my question. And I'd phrase it that way, which, of course, is not permitted because there is some kind of bizarro world respect that a journalist is supposed to give a politician who won't answer a question on an issue that is the reason that you brought them on the air with you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't waste my time. If you're going to be come on the show, have the guts to answer my question. But if you're going to be gutless, go away. I feel like I'm talking to somebody right now and yelling at them. But
well, you're yelling at all of them, and you know that's. But that's that. They get away with it.
Drives me up a wall.
You know, because people like Stephanopoulos and everybody else allow them to get away with it. The person, especially a public servant, who's being interviewed does not dictate the questions. Nope.
No, they don't. And what will they do when they don't answer the question? They do. When they don't answer the question, they are dictating the questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's just, they need to, it's very clear to us, but it's just stated. We're going to help this person build a narrative here, so let's talk to them. Let's help them build their own narrative.
Yeah.
We'll forget journalism.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then my question isn't the one I should be asking. Oh, my focus should be elsewhere, you're saying.
Well,
okay.
And the easy thing to do is the challenge. Hirono's answer, as soon as she gave that non-answer, I would have said, okay, so you're saying the Democrats did leak it. Your non-answer there tells me that you're basically admitting the Democrats did leak this. You can respond to that statement if you'd like to. Yes or no? True or false? But this is why people...
Right, at least frustrate the daylights out of them.
This is why people hated with Tim Russert, because they knew it didn't matter which side they were on. They knew they were going to face tough questions.
Well, remember, for 2 weeks in a row, none of the Democrats from the Senate Judiciary Committee would come on with Chris Wallace.
Right.
What they do is if you do that, you become blackballed.
Yeah.
They won't come on your show anymore because you demand that they answer the question. Everybody knows what the questions are going to be.
Yeah.
When you come in, look, when you're a senator and you come in to talk, or you're the president or whatever, you're somebody in the White House, when you go on a show, you know why you're going on the show.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell you, we want to talk about this. And so you know what the general questions are going to be. And your goal is, okay, look, I need to get my staff around here. We need to figure out how to wait not to answer any of the questions. How do I filibuster? Every journalist knows. Everybody on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox knows that's what is CNN. They all know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They all know they're going to do that. When is somebody going to finally say, you're not answering my question. Would you answer the question? And at that point, what happens is you're not going to get the major... You're not going to get the major personalities anymore. Think about this. We live in a society where the media believes we need to get the major personalities on, the major political personalities who run and drive this country. It's important that we get them on the air so they won't answer the questions that we ask them.
Yeah, that's it. Face the nation. No, it's face the other way. Meet the press. No, it's press the meat. We're going to do a handshake. That's the way it's going to be. We're just going to go out there and pat each other on the back. Unless you're a Republican.
And this week is week this.
Mm-hmm. Week this. Your mom. You might as well be giving that answer to every question.
Your mom.
Who do you think leaked it?
Your mom.
Yeah. Because that's the ridiculous nature of this. Why not just make it? I have a group of buddies I went to grade school with, and we play this game of grade school Scrabble, ridiculous Scrabble. The words, actually, you got to make up a word. Nothing can be a real word. And you got to use it in a sentence when you put it on the board. And as long as you use it in a sentence, it works. Okay? So that's what I would do. Just make it a game. Because that's all it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody's taking their constituents seriously in the case of a Jeff Flake. He didn't care.
Well, how she could answer it? I don't know.
I don't know who leaked it.
Yeah. I don't know who leaked it.
You're asking me a question I can't answer.
Right.
Why didn't we get the I don't know?
That's a great...
Because this isn't over yet. Because this
very
is
observant,
not
Eric. Very
over
observant.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's not. Democrats, you may think, Mr. Coons and all of you may think that Jeff Flake is a hero. I'll say what I said earlier. Friday's a long ways away. Trump just got back into the game. That can often be very dangerous for Democrats.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Tim in Salt Lake City. Tim, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I got a couple questions or themes. How does Cory Booker able to even have a vote in the Senate when he's a admitted groper to a friend?
Let's move on to something of substance, because he has a vote because he's a senator. So next question.
We could remove him, right? But the people could remove him, but that's up to the people.
Right.
Okay.
We see right. Your point.
Okay.
I want to get to the other part of your question, that's all. Go ahead.
Okay. When the FBI questions her, will her lawyers be able to be with her?
Yeah.
That's the only way we're ever going to get to be have the truth with them not being able to protect her, and she has to answer honestly.
No, she'll be, they'll be there.
She will have her lawyers present. Yeah. Yeah, no doubt of that. But here's the concern. A lot of this has come up, and thank you for the call. There's a lot of people that are saying, well, you know, she could refuse to answer certain questions. It will be noted that she refused to answer certain questions. So if they don't get a response to a question, especially if they ask something that has been asked during the hearing that was asked on Thursday, then that will be notable. That's something that the Senate committee will know.
But you can always have a lawyer with you.
Yes, right.
When you're being questioned by anybody, you can have a lawyer with you.
Oh, yeah.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. All right, so here we go. A NAFTA deal has been announced. Wall Street Journal, some of the things in the deal. All right, you ready?
Okay.
By the way, it's the number one thing is it's no longer NAFTA.
No.
Okay? We've replaced North American with United States, Mexico, and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Previously known as North America.
Right. So basically, it's the countries that make up North America free trade agreement.
Yes. The USMCA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But some of the things included here, car rules. If you want to import a car duty free from another NAFTA country, including the United States, it will be harder if the new deal is enacted. Compared to 1994, vehicles would need 75% North American content. Now, this is going to be tough because the NAFTA trade agreement, they use the terminology North American. You should know North American means United States, mm-hmm. Canada, and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Vehicles would need the 75% North American content. Currently, 63%. The shift is a win for labor unions, but a headache for global suppliers in the auto industry. And it will increase the cost of cars across the board for the consumer in Mexico, the United States, and Canada.
Because if you look at the electronics components in cars today, they're not coming from those countries.
Nope. So you're going to have to pay more for a car now. And that's not just to protect the United States. That's North America because it's across the board.
Right.
It's Canada, Mexico, and the United States have agreed to screw the consumer.
Yes. Unless you pay with the Amero.
Yeah, oh, yes, exactly.
That's another thing that came from the agreement. They're finally going to do the Amero.
Now, new rules would require at least two-fifths of a vehicle that is eligible for duty-free trade in North America originate from workers earning at least $16 an hour. Wow. They're like, and the first thing is, how do you figure that one out? You know how many, do you know how many, what, how many parts are in a car?
5,323,000.
How many parts are in a car, in a vehicle?
Right.
I mean, there's tens of thousands of suppliers. How do you figure out what two-fifths is? The new rules will require at least two-fifths of the vehicle be eligible for duty-free trade in North America to originate from workers earning at least $16 an hour. Think of it as a cap on the amount of parts coming from low-wage Mexico, but companies get credit for high-wage research and development. Oh, boy, that's going to be an out, isn't it?
Well, And what if that's not even people that are doing, what if it's a contractor in another country that's doing the research and development?
They're not NAFTA. This is only applies to NAFTA.
No, I mean, if it's, if Mexico is hiring people in Canada to do research and development.
Oh, okay.
Then that counts toward their $16 an hour on the average.
Yes. Yes. So you could hire from one of the other NAFTA. Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly. The agreement will face a sunset of 16 years. We told you that was never going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So the Trump administration compromised on that. The three countries will meet every 6 years to decide whether to renew the pact. But and then I guess they could extend it for another 16 years. But the sunset wouldn't happen for 16.
Every 6 years.
Well, they would decide whether to renew the pact after 16.
I know, but they would meet every 6 years.
Yes.
Well, this thing, they say this gives them, what, a couple of months to get this thing done and signed. And if Trump were to win re-election, that would put him at the very end of his second term.
Right, but
the 6 year meet.
Right, but the 6 year meet would, again, but you could meet and that would be a constant negotiation
going on. That's my point. Right. It's a kicking the can down the road.
Right, yes, yes. Exchange rate, in Global First, an NAFTA pact includes enforceable rules to deter countries from artificially weakening their exchange rates to gain trade advantages. But the whole point is, they said neither Canada, United States, or Mexico aren't doing that, so it's not really a big deal. U.S. Negotiated greater access to Canada's dairy market. As we said, the president's talked about that a lot. We're not sure what the actual cap would be on that, but it is a small part of the actual trade deal overall, just as the whole thing that United States has, what, the 300% tariffs mm-hmm. on tobacco that was going into Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So they've probably decided to do something with that. The rest is a dispute resolution, which the Trump administration had to make some compromises here's one. Under the agreement last month, Mexico would be protected from any brunt of the national security tariffs the Trump administration is considering on vehicles and automobile parts, and Canada got a similar deal, which means what the president says, spot national security doesn't apply to Mexico or Canada anymore, but they still got to do a deal with steel and aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it is.
And it also says that the other countries cannot use dragons or wizards.
Well, as we said, but overall,
in making their vehicles.
But as we said, overall, we knew you're going to have little victories here or there. But as we said, overall, 99% of the or 98% is going to flow across duty free everywhere else on every other product.
Mm-hmm. And this still has to go. This still has to be approved.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's supposed to be approved.
We're not even, so lawmakers still have point. To get this thing
yeah,
done.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, they kicked it to after, that this basically gives them 60 days to get it done, but assume that the Republicans don't retain the House. Then Republicans are going to feel pressured in December if they get this thing written up and done to vote on this in December. Because they're saying right now this gives them another 60 days to work out the details.
Right.
And that's the devil's always in the details. And that's where you have possibly a lame Congress.
Well, my point is this has been symbolic across the board.
Mm. Right.
It always has been mm-hmm. that 98% are still going to be duty free. The president's not going to get rid of the $150 billion trade imbalance that we have. That's going to be the natural flow of investment and however that goes. And, we're attempting to protect North America. Remember, the protection, though, it's going to raise the cost of goods and services. So overall, if you look at the automobile tariffs, depending on how that hits overall, and I have not seen an estimate on that, you'll raise the cost of cars, which will hurt. If the steel and aluminum tariffs still remain, that will increase the cost of goods and services. That will decrease GDP. We've never been sure what the president wanted to accomplish, especially recently over the last few months, because he has held every position on free trade, from unfettered free trade where no duties, tariffs, anything on any products to full-out protectionist policies. So we don't know where the president ever stood on this to begin with. We knew in the campaign he wanted to get rid of the $150 billion deficit. As we said, that's not going to happen with the free trade agreement. Nope. And if you make things more expensive, people will respond. And it looks like that, especially on cars, the United States, Canada, and Mexico has decided for your benefit to make automobiles more expensive for you.
That's one of the problems they're having with new vehicles right now.
That's the whole point.
Yep. And it's only going to get worse.
Yes. Government at work. But at least Mexico, Canada, and the United States have agreed together to raise the cost of automobiles
Its
citizens.
Yeah, and what happens when the new vehicle cost goes up? The demand for used vehicles goes up,
which means skyrocketing right now.
The prices are going way up.
Yep. Well, you saw that already. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been out the last, you mm-hmm. know, well, last month or so that used car vehicles, you know.
The sales are skyrocketing.
Skyrocketing.
The demand is skyrocketing, which means the prices skyrocket. And that's exactly what you're seeing. Now you have, essentially, by the time they get this thing done, you're going to nail that coffin shut. That's a done deal. Anybody believe it's ever going to reverse?
Well, anybody tell me how it makes our economy better by making the cost of automobiles more expensive for Canada, Mexico, and the United States.
Right.
We're all in it together, though.
Sure.
Victory! And that's the big...
We got it done.
By the way, that's the big victory.
Mm-hmm.
We've made cars expensive for everybody. That's a win!
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Canada's buying more cottage cheese. Yeah.
We're idiots.
Well, I mean, that's because
we really are. We're really idiots.
When the price of a vehicle goes up, are you ever seeing anything in terms of the average price coming down? No, the cost of government has been driving the cost of vehicles up for a long, long time.
Well, the
point that middle class families can't afford it, and now more and more, as you drive the price artificially, the price of the used vehicles goes up, you're also making it harder for middle-class families to afford those.
Mm-hmm. You hurt the poor and the middle class the most.
Mm-hmm. Saw an article that came out over the weekend about the battle that's going on right now with the big three. Well, they used to be domestic, but they're not. Fiat is not domestic, but the Dodge, Ford, and Chevrolet in pickup sales.
I saw that, yes.
Where, you know, you've got $50,000 vehicles, and now some of those trucks can get up to $100,000. Man, I love my old truck. I love it. Because you look at the cost of government associated with such a purchase, and it will drive you nuts. But it might also save you some money. I'd rather rebuild everything on my truck than go pay the cost mm-hmm. of government. Hey, they're beautiful trucks. But when you factor in the cost of government, sorry, that's where I have to draw the line.
I haven't seen anything on the soft timber thing yet.
No. Soft butter, we got that. Got that done.
Well, because soft timber, I mean, the increase in construction cost here in mm-hmm. the United States.
Right.
Also, I mean, it's the one thing that the great debate in this country, we know on this show, because we've been criticized for stating that increasing the cost of materials to build goods, irrespective of who does it, is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the response from many people, no, if Trump does it, it's right. If others do it, it's wrong. That if others raise the cost of goods and services, that's bad. If Trump raises it, well, he knows what he's doing. Well, there's never been a time in recorded history, ever, in economics, where raising the cost of goods and services makes an economy overall better. You may help certain factions. You can help this person over here. But if you think, they said this is the unions are going to love the fact that we're raising the cost of building a car. Really? Unions are thrilled? That's a good deal? making cars more expensive, making used cars more expensive, making people, you know how people, what, they're holding on to their vehicles a lot longer now.
Mm-hmm.
My old vehicle's 15 years old. I saw people are holding the average, what is it, 11, 12 years now?
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the case. And so when people hold on to their cars longer, that means what? There will be fewer jobs in the auto industry. And as labor costs go up, what do they do? What are you encouraging the auto industry, which they're already experts at doing? What do you encourage them to do? Automate.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you hurt the most? You're going to see a ton. You know where you're going to see a ton more of automation? Mexico.
As long as you're paying those automated, those robots $16 an hour.
Well, like I said, I mean, we said about economics. Everybody thinks that their guy, my guy, can make economics change. No, he can't.
No, it's not going to change at all.
Can't change. Can't change how
cost of government is cost of government. The question is, do you find it necessary, and who does it help, and who does it hurt?
Right. You cannot change economics, and that's the way people respond to incentive and disincentive. Nobody can change that. 866-90-RED-EYE.
A bearish surprise from the Agriculture Department Friday.
For both corn and soybeans, generally speaking, most folks seem to be anticipating lower ending stocks numbers than what was reported in the grain stocks report.
Lance Honig with the USDA Statistics Service, which reported we've got more corn and beans left over from the 2017 crop than most analysts expected. This, even though...
For both corn and soybeans, those disappearance numbers are movement of grain, the largest that we've ever seen for the entire season.
Even so, for soybean stocks, we end the season with 438 million bushels, 43 million more than USDA had forecast just 2 weeks ago, and up 45% from a year ago. For corn ending stocks, a little over 2.1 billion bushels. That's down 7% from September 1st a year ago, still, though, higher than expected. So feed use may have been a little less than was projected. Market reaction to this was immediate. Price declines for corn and beans. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, he's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The FBI background check, the supplemental background check on Justice Kavanaugh, we'll talk about that coming up following the bottom of the hour. You and I just looking at some of the video from Indonesia, absolutely horrifying, from that one building where you can see, I mean, there's a road in front of them near the beach, and cars are going up and down, and you can see in the distance, you can see the tsunami wave coming at them.
Yeah, the video and being taken by a man who was warning people on the ground to get up there. They're on top of a building.
Yep.
It looks to be like a rooftop parking lot, as there's some vehicles surrounding these people that are up there. And this tsunami comes in. It was roughly 10-foot wave that comes through and wipes these houses, moves them like they're nothing.
Right.
So far, the update this morning, 844 dead. Some of those dead, many of those dead, being buried in mass graves there in Indonesia after this earthquake happened on Friday. And then, of course, after the earthquake, the tsunami hit. And Palu City is really kind of the center point for much of this activity. And you're seeing a ton of this. Again, this footage that's coming out, and most of it from citizens there and people that were there on the ground. But, wow. And then you look at the pictures that came out on Saturday and Sunday, the aftermath, and it just looks horrific.
Yeah, it's just horrifying watching that video because the guy screaming for, and there's kids that are running up that got off the road and got up there. But It's just the roads, people going down the road back, you know, just driving down it. You just know in about 10 seconds it's going to be wiped out, and it was.
Yeah.
That's terrifying just to see.
For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
We're going to pick up a lot of moisture for Southern California and Western Arizona as the remnants of Hurricane Rosa come ashore through the early part of the week. There's a low in the Pacific that's combining with the system that'll create some unsettled weather. Most likely as far as Los Angeles with a chance of showers today. We'll continue to see the chance of rain along the Gulf Coast from South Texas over to Florida. You'll note we've already seen some snow in the higher elevations of the mountain regions of some of the northern tier states, Idaho, Montana, North and South Dakota. So if you're traveling in and out of I-94 in the region, I-29 or 15, keep in mind this is the time of year that snow can come at a moment's notice. But most of what we're seeing today, falling from Seattle all the way over to Detroit, is going to be in the form of rain. Clear today in the Northeast and Midwest. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
They never follow the company code of conduct. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye got this tweet to us. By the time the week is over, the Dems will bring forward 1 million people who have claimed to have been at the party and will demand that they all be interviewed. The state of California will approach. State of Maryland will approach.
Yeah.
And say we all wish to be interviewed. No, I think what's going to happen if I was taking odds, odds are because they're interviewing Ramirez, the Democrats will scream and yell and say we need to hear from her next. And so a hearing will be set for her for a week from Friday, which will give it another week.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to continue it, I just have the feeling if there's nothing there, that at that point Grassley and McConnell will just say we're done. It's time to get a vote.
Well, and that was the agreement, and this is what Coons agreed to. Remember, Coons admits to 60 Minutes last night. What we've already known, and that was a deal struck by him.
Yep.
And Jeff Flake.
Yep.
And that it's reasonable, that 1 week is reasonable.
Yep.
It's going to go forward. And there, by the way, the committee voted Friday evening. This didn't really make a lot of the headlines, but the committee voted Friday evening to send it to the Senate Majority Leader. So Mitch McConnell now has the options open for the full vote.
Right.
So that's a procedural thing, but there's a reason it was done Friday night after it was agreed that there would be the FBI follow-up background check. There's a reason that they did it then so that they can basically put it into motion. They put it in the full Senate's hands, and now the Senate Majority Leader McConnell has the option to call for the vote as soon as that report comes back.
I want to play some audio from Face the Nation. Yesterday, Senator Tom Cotton on. I want to play this, and it's at least over a minute long. I know that, maybe a little bit longer than that. But I want to play it because on Face the Nation, he gets into a discussion with John Dickerson and gets quite insistent that he wants to let people know what's going on and wants to let them know what the process could have been. Because as we know now, Tom Cotton's talking about the fact that they want Dianne Feinstein investigative. Lindsey Graham is talking about the Republicans are saying that she did not do the right thing. What specifically? Let's hear from Tom Cotton.
Well, John, first off, let's understand why we had to have this hearing. Ms. Ford made these allegations in a confidential letter to Dianne Feinstein in July, shortly after Brett Kavanaugh was nominated. The very night he was nominated, Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader, said that he would do everything in his power to stop the nomination, and that's what happened. For 3 months, the Democrats have turned the advise and consent process into a search and destroy mission. These allegations are completely unsupported by any evidence. What evidence there is to a 36-year-old claim all support Judge Kavanaugh's denial. But the Democrats have disgraced this process and the United States Senate in the orchestrated smear campaign of character assassination they've run against Judge Kavanaugh.
Their argument, of course, was that Dr. Ford asked to have this held in confidentiality and that they tried to do that. And that's what.
So let me talk. Like, John, let me talk to you about that. Let me talk to your listeners about, or your viewers about that. There is a well-established process of confidentiality on the committee. Dianne Feinstein could have showed that letter to Chuck Grassley, and the two of them, as the leaders of that committee, could have shared it with the FBI, who could have discreetly conducted this inquiry in July and in August without betraying Ms. Ford's confidences. And they have betrayed her. They pointed her to lawyers who lied to her and did not tell her that the committee staff was willing to go to California to interview her. All that's water under the bridge. Those lawyers are going to have to face a D.C. bar investigation into their misconduct. Dianne Feinstein and her staff is going to face an investigation for why they leaked that. All this could have been done discreetly. It happens hundreds of times every year in the Judiciary Committee.
It doesn't happen hundreds of times with issues that are this sensitive.
But no, John, it's Senator, designed for issues that are this sensitive, John.
Senator,
it's designed
I'm worried
for
you're not
going like
to get
this.
A chance to talk about
Yeah. So there you go.
Mm.
I want to move away from that because that doesn't look good for the
that
Democrats
doesn't fit
at all.
My narrative.
So let's move over.
Yeah.
Well, no, because those are huge points that he made.
Yeah.
I mean, those are huge points, first, about the lawyers. We had asked that question. We'd asked that question early on. Well, she made it seem like, Ford made it seem like, I never knew that the committee wished to talk to me. Well, the committee talked to the lawyers, and we had asked that question. We said that hasn't been resolved. And Tom Cotton coming out over the weekend and saying her lawyers didn't tell her, and they need to. And as he said, Ford's lawyers will face a Washington, D.C. bar investigation for allegedly not informing her that the Senate Judiciary Committee staffers were willing to travel to California to interview her. Well, why wouldn't they?
Right.
I mean, we're working for you pro bono. Are you? You're not working in the best interest of your client if you're not giving them the options. That is the charge that Cotton is making there, which is huge because that shows what? That why wouldn't your lawyers be working for the best interest of you? Because they're working for the best interest of someone else.
Yeah.
Well, how much are you paying them as a client? I'm not paying them. Oh. So are they actually working for you? And that's where you and I talked about this Friday, and Cotton's making the allegation that, you know, they'll be facing the Washington, D.C. bar investigation for not informing her. Well, you asked the question, why didn't they inform her? If she didn't know, why did they, and will those questions be asked by the FBI?
Well, I mean, you're looking to, through the FBI, looking to vet the process all over again, right? Because it is a serious allegation. It's just as much to prove her wrong as it is to prove him wrong or liar. It is just as much about finding out, well, in fact, the entire purpose is finding out the truth. It is not necessarily to find out which one is lying, because one of them is lying. It's about finding out the truth, which means it's equally as much about the person making the allegation as it is the accused.
And the other point is where Feinstein and the Democrats and the media, we're always trying to make the point, well, Feinstein did her best. No, she didn't. And as we said all along, if you listen to the show, we said, look, there is a process. And I'm glad that Tom Cotton pointed out the process.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they do this hundreds of times. And Dickerson, he doesn't know. Well, not this sensitive. He goes, no, just this sensitive on other issues, but things that are highly secretive that we don't want people to know about because we're doing, you know, in different investigations. And so this is actually done where she should have. When she got the letter, the protocol is you go to Grassley. You're the ranking minority member. You go to Grassley. You talk about it. and you say, okay, what can we, well, probably what we you would have said was, look, we can, let's contact her back and tell her we can do an FBI investigation if she wishes to, this to go forward. We can do an FBI investigation, and we can keep her name out of it for a certain period of time. But we can definitely do the FBI investigation.
Mm-hmm.
We can actually interview people on this and keep your name out of it.
Yeah.
And then when we get to a certain point, we might not be able to, but as to the point of the investigation, absolutely we can. Did Feinstein tell her that? Or Feinstein's goal was to hold this as long as possible, to spring it at the last possible second.
Yep. Knowing that their only play here was political in nature, not actual procedural, other than delaying the process itself. They were calling for the FBI investigation. But the Democrats didn't really want an FBI investigation. Had they wanted the investigation, Feinstein would have made that happen right away. Which tells me one thing, a couple of things. They didn't buy into her story, number one. Because if they felt it was fully credible and could be proven and backed up by an FBI investigation, then Feinstein would have acted July 30th.
And you know something? I agree with the Democrats. They should do an expanded background check, and they should talk to Ford and say, your lawyers are with you. Oh, by the way, why didn't you tell her that they were willing to come and see her?
Yeah.
So is anybody paying you besides her? Let's expand this. I wonder if the Democrats really wish it to be expanded.
Huh. I'm doubting it.
Okay, we're done. It's a week. Okay, we're going to vote no anyway, so it's...
Well, because what they need is a new unobtainable call. So in this case, like you said, Ramirez, she needs to be heard. She needs to testify.
I believe that will be the next thing.
She needs to tell her story.
They're going to realize this one's going nowhere, so you need to go to the next allegation that's not corroborated and hear from her. And you just go down the line and you see how far you can extend this.
Now, the ball is in, procedurally, the ball is in McConnell's court.
Yes.
But the vote is not.
No.
Where the votes fall is not. Can you stand to lose a Jeff Flake?
Yes.
If you have
Manchin?
Heitkamp, who's still on the fence, Donnelly is a no now.
If you have Manchin, you can lose.
If you've got Manchin,
you can lose Flake.
If you've got Heitkamp, and if you've got Collins, and if you've got Tester...
No, you won't have Tester. He said no.
So if that goes forward, how many, I guess the question is, how many can you afford to lose?
You can lose, if Manchin's on, you can lose Flake and one more. Because you've got 51.
Mm-hmm.
And so Manchin would make 52. You could lose then two, still have 50, and have the vice president break the vote.
Right. And if they think they've got that, then McConnell's not going to hold it up at all. If they've got if they had the vote, they would have done this over the weekend.
I have the feeling that they will. I have a feeling that if the FBI investigation comes in, and you know, even if it talks to Ramirez and said, "Look, nobody can corroborate her story either on this." In fact, we sort of get the same thing with the witnesses there. I think at that point they will have the vote. And then, will you ever hear about this again, or does it die forever? It probably dies forever. Somebody said they'll keep bringing it up. No, they won't. They
well, it'll get nowhere. It won't produce anything for them.
Yeah,
because it won't affect his decisions. It can't.
Right. So they, you know, if once he's seated on the Supreme Court, well, they'll impeach. Well, they could impeach, but you'd still need 2/3 of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to get 2/3 of the Senate to impeach a Supreme Court judge on this. All you would need, you know, and so you could impeach, not remove from the Supreme Court, but that's wasting time and energy for the Democrats, who know they're never going to get, you know, to the 62 on the lack of evidence that you have on any of these cases right now.
Right, because you're not going to learn anything new about this, about the alleged events. And we're likely to learn nothing new about the alleged events from the FBI background check.
866-90-RED-EYE.
How much do you know about synthetic oil? Heavy-duty trucks have been running on traditional mineral oil for the last 100 years. But today's technology brings us other options to consider. It's better quality. Unlike mineral oils, synthetic oils have a consistent molecular structure, giving it the ability to support pressures from higher horsepower engines, especially at lower RPMs. It also allows oil to reduce friction in an engine, controlling temperatures and improving fuel economy. They're cleaner. Synthetics pick up fewer contaminants as they do their job of lubrication. They also have better oxidation stability, resulting in an overall cleaner engine. Synthetic and semi-synthetic oil may be a bigger investment up front, but the benefits of its high-quality composition will pay off in the long run.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes them to do this now supplemental background check. It's not an investigation. This is not a criminal investigation. It's just they're expanding the background check and interviewing a number of people. I wonder how many agents are involved in it.
Keep in mind that the people that they're going to be interviewing are all over the place. They're not all in one location.
Right.
So you would have to have the agents from field offices all over the country be assigned to this. So you could do multiple interviews in one day. It's not necessarily going to be one team doing all of the interviews. They would all be, you would have separate assignments in separate parts of the country because that would make it more feasible and also allow them to get it done within the time frame. There's no way you can have one team traveling back and forth
with
travel and everything else.
Yes,
There's no way you could get all that done in a week. So you could have multiple agents taking care of this in a matter of days. And that, of course, is the idea.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.